Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to All Exits Closed. My guest today is Peter Cookson, retired doctor, and he's here to talk about the press coverage of the 1918 pandemic and how sparse it was. So, Peter, what was the, from your perspective, what was the press coverage like? What did people tell other people, and how does it differ from today?
Well, today, my experience here has been there has been ample press coverage of the coronavirus epidemic that, or pandemic rather, that has been coursing through the whole planet. And that is quite a different experience that the people who were living in the United States and other countries in Western Europe primarily, that's where we have some information, were exposed to information about the virus. In fact, it was mostly kept very quiet. The people did not understand what was happening initially. The initial reports came from Kansas and then from a newspaper called, let me see, in, I wrote it down here. Anyhow, Santa Fe Monitor. Okay, that's the name of the newspaper that was reporting. And the Santa Fe Monitor reflected what was going on in terms of how the information was carefully hidden from the general public. When they would not publish on the front page that quite a number of the citizens in the Santa Fe area or in their catchment area were contracting an illness that, unlike any other influenza-type illness, and many of them were dying. So they would put that information in the back pages. And we have a similar arrangement in the Times Journal that comes out of Cobleskill, in which if there are a variety of different communities that are reported on by reporters who cover them, and they will talk about individuals living in the communities who have had unusual experiences, like they went for a boat ride or they just came back from visiting their relatives and so on. It's very characteristic of small-town newspapers. So the Santa Fe Monitor was carefully monitoring all of the information that they had, but they were putting it in a place that would not attract the attention of very many people. And so what was going on elsewhere in the United States was the war effort that President Wilson was aggressively managing, and he was insistent that the information about anything that could possibly be considered anti-American, anti-war, was suppressed. The new Sedition Act was, the original Sedition Act was occurred in 1798 by under John Adams, but then he put through another new Sedition Act, in which it was punishable by 20 years in jail to, quote, utter, print, write, or publish any disloyal, profane, scurrilous, or abusive language about the government of the United States. That really put the kibosh on, or made journalists very nervous about publishing anything that could possibly be construed as disloyal. And then to enforce the law, what became the Federal Bureau of Investigation agreed to make a volunteer group called the American Protective League. And they were all given badges, and they were told that they are now members of a secret service. And everywhere the league spied on neighbors, investigated slackers and food hoarders, and demanded to know why people didn't buy or didn't buy more Liberty bonds. Anyhow, what they fabricated was a spy network that went throughout the entire population, and people were like living in East Germany with the Stasi checking on every move of every citizen. And this is what was happening in the United States. So nobody would say anything, and certainly the newspapers would not say anything or print anything. Then, even that wasn't enough, so they decided to go to the post office. And they appointed a guy in the post office who then decided on his own what literature or what newspapers could go through the mail. And he would read them, or he'd have people read them, and they would say, uh-oh, this is seditious. And so they would destroy the copies and then go after the printers and the authors of the work, and then prosecute them under the Sedition Act. So no one wanted to write anything or share any information of what was happening in the United States. And unfortunately, during a war, the early phases of the war, they found that they had very few people, young men, who would be willing to volunteer. So they had instituted a draft and scooped up thousands of young men and hauled them off to what they called cantonments, great big camps that were fabricated overnight, essentially, in very flimsy barracks and tents when they ran out of barracks material or barracks space. And the winter of 1917 to 1918 was particularly cold. And so the poor soldiers were crowded into insufficiently insulated, poorly insulated, poorly constructed buildings and tents, standing around the stove just trying to stay warm. And so the introduction of even one individual who had the influenza virus would rapidly spread throughout the barracks and the tents. And very soon they found that they had more and more young men coming each morning to a sick call. And then many of them with pneumonia were requiring hospitalization. And then there were many others who were not clearly affected clinically. And many of them were just shipped off from one camp to another as they became prepared or trained in their effort to get them qualified to carry a gun and go to Europe. And they trained them for as little as a period of time as 3 months. And if you were very young, you got an extra month or two training. Very young means under 18. Gosh knows what the heck they were doing with those young people. But they got an extra couple of months, and maybe they waited until they got to be 18 before they sent them off to France and Germany or what have you. So what I was able to come to terms with, what I was able to find in the reference texts that I have, is people didn't want to say anything about what was going on because they would go to jail. That was as simple as that. And with all of these Secret Service in every town and every village and every block had Secret Service people monitoring everyone's activities, then they were sure to be accused of seditious activity or seditious publications, and they'd wind up in jail, or, you know, if not in jail, at least being accused of being against the war effort, and so if they didn't go to jail, then they were ostracized by the other members of their communities. And this was done on behalf of the war effort, and our leader Woodrow Wilson was in charge, and so as a result of that, we had far more deaths than we needed to. There was a very interesting point, though, was that there was a Surgeon General at the time, his name was Gorgas, G-O-R-G-A-S, William Crawford Gorgas, who understood very well how this particular disease was spread, and admonished and beseeched the generals and the higher ups in the military to isolate those persons who had symptoms and to take better care of the soldiers, basically, and if the soldiers had been in contact with, if soldiers who were not sick had been in contact with those who were sick, please don't send them to another camp, because they will carry with them the virus and you will start an infection in that next Fort Dix or Fort Devens or wherever mm-hmm. else they happen to have been sent to. So it spread like wildfire because of mismanagement. It could have been managed otherwise, as the coronavirus is currently being managed in an effort to control the spread by reducing the contacts between individuals and also identifying possible contacts and further reducing it. So there's a much better understanding of what's going on now.
Okay, Peter, the most important question is, wasn't Woodrow Wilson aware of how fast this virus was spreading? And why didn't he take the
steps?
There
were good people.
Go ahead.
What's that? Oh, okay. There were good people in the military who had access to the information by way of General Gorgas. And there were good people who were advising his advisors as to what was going on. And my recollection is that at one time, Gorgas spoke directly with Wilson to try to impress upon him the necessity to take care of the soldiers, because they were going to be losing far more soldiers, which they ultimately did, to disease mm-hmm. than to any combat or war wounds or death on the in the battlefield.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell you what was going on in his mind, but I can tell you that Wilson later contracted the illness and spent the last 13 months of his presidency essentially cloistered because of the effects of the disease on the central nervous system, brain, were such that he was not functional, certainly not functional as a president. That's an aside. So, could he have? Yes, there were good people out there who knew what to do. They chose to ignore them.
Wow.
And so they suffered.
Do you think that if the press was more vigilant and if times were better and stuff was written about it then, do you think it could have given the 21st century problem a little more insight?
Yes, no doubt about it. The information
okay.
was out there. That's what you're saying. Was the information out there? Yes. Did good people continue to work on identifying and proposing methods of management that were superior to what we used back in the 1918, 1919? Yes. So that data was out there. And there are good people in the 21st century who were aware of that and put that information to good use. And most notably, the ones who paid attention are the citizens of New Zealand, for instance, and the citizens of Singapore, and the citizens of South Korea. They understood, they read their books, they understood what had happened in the olden days, and they put to use the lessons that their forebears had learned and were successful in curtailing the number of infections and the severity of the infections. What's of interest is that the most severe infections and the greatest number of people who contracted the illness were those who were living in cramped quarters, that is, in hovels and in ghettos. And in the case of the army, was in barracks and tents that were poorly constructed and could not deal with the severe cold. So the soldiers all stood around the potbelly stove in the middle of each one of those tents, doing what to one another, I have no idea. But, you know, just trying to stay warm, I think, is what they were trying to do, whatever they had to do in order to do that. So, yeah, the answer to your question is yes. The data was out there. The information was out there. Certain peoples took advantage of that information and successfully managed and treated their population in a way that enabled them to have a very low numbers of infected individuals who were not very sick. The individuals who got sickest, and we're starting to see it, or I'm starting to see people recognize the fact that, you know, what they're saying is that the black people and the brown people and those people who have different colored skin, why they're getting sicker than the white people. Now, what could that be? Well, that's all about economics. That's all about living, you know, 10 people in a room, or, you know, people living in crowded conditions is probably the best way of characterizing that. And they also were aware of that back in early part of the 20th century, and actually in long, long ago, under the pressure of the Black Plague, people recognized that, all those people who live in the slums of the towns or cities in Europe, those are the people that got sick first and who died. And those people who were living apart and out in the countryside, they were less likely to get sick. And if they did get sick, they didn't all die. So there's something economic, or, you know, there's socioeconomic issues or problems that aggravate diseases.
So do you think that, this is horrible. Do you think that Woodrow Wilson, and I hate to say it like this, you think he himself was responsible for a lot of deaths in this country, not only in this country, but in Europe when those boys went overseas? Go ahead.
But I don't think I don't think that he understood what was going on, or you know, he had good people around him who and I don't have a record. The only book that I had, and I can't put my finger, I think I borrowed it from a friend. I think the book was 1918. That's the name of the book. Where there are a lot more details on what happened at Versailles between Wilson and Clemenceau and I can't remember who the Brit was who was there trying to decide what to do with Germany after the First World War. There were lots of records in that book of discussions, but they all had to do with geopolitical problems that the war created, and that people all wanted a piece of the colonies, et cetera, et cetera. I don't recall reading anything in there that said, what are we going to do about the disease and all these sick people? I didn't see anything in there. Does that mean it wasn't considered? No, it doesn't. Perhaps they didn't think it was important. I don't know why, but you know, those of us who look around and place a greater value on human life are puzzled by those persons who don't place that much value on human lives or place
okay,
that much value on
human lives. Okay, let me answer this question. For people who believe that climate change will cause more and more pandemics, because of the documentation that has been going on now, do you think pandemics in the future might not be as severe as what's going on in this world at the moment?
Well, I'm not sure I understand your question. What I think I heard you say is, do I think that the pandemics will become less frequent in a climate changed world? Is that what your question is?
What I'm saying is, because people are documenting what's going on, if something like this was to hit again, would the elected officials or whoever is in charge of the country or the society then, would they be more aware to take the proper precautions?
Well, that's an interesting question. And that what you're asking me is, do I believe that those persons who are who belong to the political class would have a significant alteration in their behavior or belief systems that would enable them to look at the problems that they would confront as a result of the climate change and behave differently from the way they are currently behaving or have behaved in the past. And I don't have that kind of faith in the mutability of or the ability of the political class, members of the political class, to change their behavior in favor of the those of us who are consider ourselves workers or ordinary people or, you know, wage slaves or whatever other term you choose to use to characterize
right.
individuals who are not elites or not of the political class, a little lower class, you know, middle class is gone. And so, I don't have that kind of faith in those people. No, they have a different set of belief systems that enable them to behave as they do. And that would have to change before we would find someone, leaders who would care for the people. You know, I don't see that. That's
wow.
a political statement. just look at what they're announcing today about the new, $3 trillion bill that the U.S. Congress wants to push through. And the Republicans said, this is a Democrat wish list. There's no way in heck that we're going to pass this. Oh, okay. They want to, you know, help the ordinary citizens on the main street. Not that I am particularly enamored of one political group or another, but I see if either one of them is focusing on the average citizen instead of big business, why I tend to be more favorable towards those who would spend more energy or effort or money on helping little guys, little businesses, taking care of the sick and the old. And well, the elites are taking care of themselves. They've packed up their bags, gotten on their boats, and have made off to wherever they're going to greet their money at that location.
You were saying about the press back in 1917 and 1918. And
yes.
Okay, now let's go up to today. I'm sure there's a lot of people in the administration who are smart enough to realize what's exactly going on. Why would they not in good conscience subscribe to what Trump is doing?
Why would they subscribe to what he's doing?
Why don't they support
Mr. Trump? Oh, okay.
Why are they supporting what he's doing? And he's not doing a terrific job of looking out for the people. He's looking out for himself.
Oh, okay.
And
all right. I missed the...
And they're going along with him.
Okay.
Right?
Yes, there is a group of people that belong to the political class that are our leaders in Congress who agree with what's going on and what's happening, and prefer to keep doing what we're doing so that whatever goal it is that they are focused on. And so you're asking the same question, and that is, you know, why do people not care about other people?
Right.
And that's a question that's been asked for a very long time over and over again. And mm-hmm. I ask, who are these people who don't care about their brothers and sisters, mothers and fathers?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer to that question is very complex. I have an answer to it. But it's very complex and it's very controversial. And if you look at them very, very carefully and watch them very, very carefully and watch their body language, you'll see they're different. And so they are different and they behave differently. And so we have to decide whether or not we want to be led by them or led by someone who is more interested in the health and well-being of the general population of this country. And I choose to look for those individuals that are more interested in looking for the health and well-being of all of us rather than small group.
It seems like both the two major parties are they don't have the empathy for what's going on in the country. In effect, they're saying, okay, kids, you're on your own. We've got our own things to worry about. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
And that's
yes,
pretty
pure and simple,
sad.
Yes.
That's pretty
yes,
sad.
I agree.
Yeah.
That's where we've come to. Yes. That's where we are. You've analyzed it very clearly. And your conclusions, I would underline and agree with 100%.
Wow.
We are not well served by the political class today, period.
Right.
And they're not unique to the United States either. They're elsewhere on the planet.
Okay. So
where did they come from?
What?
I said, where did they come from? Where did they come from? Yeah, exactly. But I think that's a reasonable question to ask.
Uh-huh.
Where did they come from, you know? And an answer is right now, we don't know. There are good people who have asked that question long before I did and have explored mm-hmm. it very carefully and have mm-hmm. Come to some other conclusions. And nobody wants to listen to them, of course. But so they're not here. I mean, they didn't come from here. it's a hard one to prove. But if you read the Bible, that is a Christian Bible, and then you read other ancient texts where the people who watched what was happening thousands of years ago and read it for what it is, that's a historical document, just as good people in the Christian faith believe that the Bible is an important and reliable document. If you look at it very carefully, you'll see they tell you where they came from. It wasn't here.
So we're just about, at times, just about up. So I hope at some point we'll be able to resume this conversation. So you've been listening to retired Dr. Peter Cookson. This is All Access Closed. And if you like this show, follow us on Twitter. Thank you, Peter. Have a great day. Have a great weekend. And thank you, everybody, for listening.
Right. Are you all done now?